Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Author to Author podcast. I am your host, Pamela R. Haynes, award-winning author of two books called Loving the Brothers and Loving the Sisters. I interview independently published and traditionally published authors from around the globe. The Author to Author podcast is available on 20 listening platforms and 6 radio stations, namely East London Radio Mixcloud, Pamtango Radio, UK246.com, Chalk Hill Community Radio, LW Talk Radio, and the Sound of My Life radio stations. This podcast is sponsored by Dalgetty Herbal Teas. Use the discount code A2AS6 for 10% off your next Dalgetty tea order. In this week's episode, we are back in beautiful Barbados to interview one of my sheroes, author and criminologist at the University of the West Indies, Kim Ramsey. Let's jump into her episode now. See you on the other side. Hello there, Kim. Thank you for joining me on the Author to Author podcast. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm not too bad. Finally, I get to have this conversation with you. I think we last saw each other in Barbados back in January 2020, when I got a personalized copy of your books, two of your books. But thank you for giving us a copy of your very first book, Barbados Most Wanted. I'm sure it's going to make an excellent competition prize coming out of the podcast. So tell me, how was Cropover this year?
Hot, busy, packed with fets were very packed. It was a successful Cropover, I would say that.
Fantastic. Glad to hear. Are you on holidays at the moment or are you still at work?
No, I didn't take a holiday at the same.
Okay. Is the island a lot quieter now? Are people now travelling out to move on to other carnivals or go back to their own countries?
I would say that. I think so. I think most of the effects have died down. You still see a few people here in Barbados, but most of them have gone back home. It's usually you have the peak and then it just quickly de-escalates. So.
Yeah. We know each other from our mutual friend, Valerie, and we got to meet each other, I think it was, for the first time in 2017. I've watched your career quite closely since then. But before we get there, tell us, in terms of your heritage, whereabouts in Barbados are you from? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm born and bred St. Philip person, so I'm from the country. I'm a criminologist. I've been one for 23 years. Studied in England, studied in Leicester in the UK, studied clinical criminology. And since then, I have always been in the field of working with crime, doing research. Now I'm working with the Office of the Attorney General, working with the Minister of State, looking at crime prevention. So that's what I do. I work with crime prevention, looking at crime prevention programs. And I also teach at the university. I've been teaching there for on and off for about 20 years. And I write books. I write books on crime. I've written 5 books. The first one is Barbados Most Wanted, which is about 11 of our most notorious criminals in Barbados. And this is also my most popular book. And it looks at all of them who escaped from prison. That's why it's called Most Wanted. They've all escaped custody and were wanted for a period of time. I also have, put it in order. I have a book called Murders That Shocked Barbados, which looks at some of the most heinous crimes that happened in Barbados over a period of time. And the first one, obviously all murders are heinous, but these are ones that particularly grab the public's attention. The first one is a murder that happened in 1930. Well, several murders, because the man went berserk and he killed about 5 or 6 people in 1933 in the parish of St. Andrew. And he then was hanged less than a year later. So it speaks to the swiftness of our judicial system back then compared to now. There are a lot of lessons to be learned about treatment of offenders, how swift judge punishment was justice, whether it was fair, because some people at that time were not given fair, quote-unquote, fair trials. So this looks at several murders that have happened over that period of time. And one of the most shocking ones was, which I ended with, was the Campus Trends murder in 2010, where these two guys firebombed a clothing store, a boutique, not knowing that there were six girls who ran in the back because they saw the attack going on, and they ran and hid in a closet in the back, and they were trapped. And the fire obviously engulfed them, and they perished. So those guys, that really invoked the ire of Barbadians, who collectively wanted swift justice and wanted the death penalty for them. So I've looked at some of those very shocking murders, and I've given my own analysis of those murders and the views on justice system and so on. This is also a very popular book. We had a murder, the Pele murder, with this guy who was, it was supposed to be wrapped up in politics. The story is a very weird story. If you read it, it does not make sense. And then people again wonder how come no justice was served in that. So it gives you a peek into crime in Barbados, how the justice system worked, how policing worked, how offenders were treated, how victims were treated, all the kind of things that I think that would make interesting reading and analysis. After that, I went on to write a more historical book. It is not as popular as the other books, but it is one of my favorites because I'm a researcher, and this looks at the history of our penal system. So it's called The Barbados Prison System: Chronicles of Incarceration, Death, Riots, and Reformation. And by the title itself, it talks about how people are imprisoned or were imprisoned from the days of slavery. So I've gone, if anybody out there is interested in the history of Barbados, this is a very good book to capture that history.
Kim, how many prisons are there in Barbados? Because it's such a
Only
small place.
one. But back then we had a prison in every parish because the prisons were tied to the plantations in slavery. So then obviously then we had the main prison in Porritt Street, which housed everybody at one in one place. There was no separation. So women, men, children were all housed in a what I refer to as a dungeon. And obviously there was a lot of contamination. That's what the blue books and the persons, the colonial secretaries back then referred to them as contamination. So you have mixing of persons, children, as I said, males, females. So this book looks at the history of our penal system, and then it also looks at riots in Barbados, escapes from the prison, inquiries. We have a lot of inquiries in Barbados into things that happened in the prison and their outcomes. I've written a chapter on the different superintendents of prison that we have. I must note that almost every superintendent in prison, in our prison, left on a cloud of controversy. It is almost like prisons are difficult places to manage, and they always come with some kind of controversy. So they always left, not walking away, with their medals and their honor, but always with some kind of controversy. And in many cases, they were sent home. So I've captured all of that in this book. I've looked at things like prison reform, the prison culture, and executions. What types of things happen in prison in terms of executions? Voices of those who were condemned to die, that kind of stuff. So it's one of my favorite books. And unfortunately, people don't like to read all of that history. But if you are a historian or you're into history, it is a very good book to look at in terms of our prison history. My second last book, Sex, Drugs, and Murder, it is similar to Murders That Shocked Barbados. But the only difference between this book and Murders That Shocked Barbados is that these are all unsolved. Whereas Murders That Shocked Barbados is a combination of solved and unsolved murders. It's just murders that shocked the country. But these are all unsolved. So again, interesting reading. I've changed the names of the victims because some of them lived in circumstances that were not the best, and they would not want to get engaged in victim shaming. So I changed the names. But it's interesting to note the title will confuse people because it's not a book about sex. It's just that many of the murders in here were related in some way to either prostitution or something like that. Some activity of sex was involved in some of them. There are some people who were selling drugs and got killed because they were selling drugs, and that's why you have the drug title in here. And then obviously all of these culminated in murder. Drugs, because there was prostitution that involved drugs and stuff like that. So these are all factors that I discuss in this book. They're all unsolved murders. But as I always tell my readers, if you put on your Sherlock Holmes hat, you probably can solve some of them. Or you know who, as we said, who done it. And my
Wow.
final book is The Unspoken: A Glimpse of the Dark Side of Gang and Street Culture. And this looks at the gang life in Barbados, the underbelly of our society, the underworld, how gangs are created, I begin by speaking about the fact that there are a lot of people who do not believe we have gangs in Barbados, but I capture that in my first couple chapters. For years, police, politicians, even the clergy were saying there are no gangs, they're just troublesome groups. But then I go on to say, but that is not really true. If you look at the history of gangs and if you look at the definition of gangs, you would see that there are indeed gangs and they were very organized in some circumstances. Just to tell you what some of the chapters are, I look at the historical context, as I said, about gangs back in the 80s and 90s in Barbados. We had a gang called Kool and the Gang, named after the singers, because according to the guy that I interviewed, who's still alive, the lead of the gang, he said, I asked him, how did you get that name? He said, people would show him and say, hey, how are you? He said, I cool. And just by that, he became cool, and his people were the gang. So it's Kool and the Gang. Silly, but that stuck with him for years. We also had the CNN gang. We had Jesus and the disciples. We had Scare Them. So I've captured all of these in this book. I've also looked at actual testimonials from former gang members. One of them speaks about his life as a Christian now. And I titled that From Gang to Christ because he's now a pastor. So he talks about his life as a gangster. And another one he's not a pastor, but he talks about how he changed his life as well and sought Christ. So I thought that was very interesting. And then I went on to talk about some of the current gangs in Barbados. I didn't want to just speak about gangs because gangs is not all there is to the street culture. So I did an interview with a lady who I call Janet, but that's not her real name. And she's in prison for murder. But she was also part of the streets and she was a victim of incest. I thought that was a very touching story because all of her family basically had sex in her from her father, her cousins, her brothers, and even one of her brothers became her pimp. So I talked about her life and the role of the streets. And then I interviewed a man. He's white, and I found that interesting. I know him personally, but he was an addict, and he was an addict on meth and heroin. And he even talked about how meth and heroin destroyed him, almost destroyed him. He lost all of his teeth, and he has bounced back. Talked about the thousands of dollars he spent in the drug business, buying drugs in clubs, partying, where he would meet the drug supplier in the toilet and they would exchange the transaction. Very touching and very opening story about what really goes on in Barbados that we who live on the surface do not understand. But if you dig deep, you will understand the things that go on in the streets in Barbados. I talk about the role of women in gangs, how men in gangs view women, which is very interesting as well. And I talk about social exclusion. Who and where are these gang members coming from? They're not coming. Most of them do not, I'm not going to say all of them, most of them do not come from the upper echelons of society. They're usually from disenfranchised societies, communities in society. So I talk about that too, and the importance of gangs and the importance of understanding gangs and understanding the subculture by understanding that alienation and that social exclusion. And then I interviewed what we would call a don. Jamaica refers to them as don. In Barbados, we call them the boss. Boss of the community. I interviewed a former boss who talked about how he grew from being just a normal member in society to a drug boss. And then I end off with my discussion. And that basically is that's the synopsis of my 5 books that I've written in 5 years, 2018 to 2023.
Well, congratulations, Kim. A
Thank you.
huge body of work, especially in the last few years. The last time I met you, you just had the 2 books. So congratulations on all the
Thank
others.
you.
And you gave a thorough analysis. You've taken away all of my questions by summing up all of your books, which is absolutely fine, perfect. But tell me, how do you go about your research, number one? And number two, how do you gain the individual's trust that you're going to tell their story in an appropriate, sensitive manner?
Okay. The first question is about how I went about doing my research. Newspaper articles, interviews with stakeholders, gatekeepers. So I find people who know people. I approach them, tell them to introduce me to this person. The prison has been extremely helpful in most of my books. Police, I could not have done any of this without those two institutions. So reading files, police files, etc. And going to interview some family members. The most difficult part of it was the family members, especially with the books on murders. They do not want to talk to you. It is understandable. I do not know how people get it done, but families are always the most difficult hurdle to cross. What I tend to do is that I tell them, I will try to respect their privacy. I will let them know because most of these murders are already known about, and I try not to use recent murders. I go back very far. That's why I told you about the 1933 murders. I went up to the 80s and so on. But I write it. That's the most difficult part of it. Writing about the actual persons who commit crimes was easier because they're documented. So you just refer to what's documented, and most of them are dead. So I relied heavily on interviews with police, former police detectives, some of who've passed on since I've interviewed them. God rest their souls. But I relied heavily on interviews, and so I use triangulation, a mixture of documented stuff, first-hand interviews, secondhand information, going out there and talking to people who knew these people. It was exciting, sometimes dangerous, but I've never ever once been compromised. So I consider myself very lucky. I've gone into the dark bellies of society. I sat on steps in the ghetto at 7 o'clock in the night and interviewed people. But I've never had an air of fear about me because I did not. I think when you walk with an air of fear, you will not get through. I am no threat to anybody. So I never went in with that view. I just did what I had to do. Sometimes, most times, I will tell people where I am and that some of my police friends know where I'm going. But that's how I gathered my information. Your second question was about.
About trust and confidence, and
Oh,
people
well,
are sharing
that
their
ties into the
stories.
question. Right. That ties into my answer just now. With the guys in prison, when I interviewed them, I told them what types of book I was writing. There's some things they told me that I did not put in the book, but most of the things they were comfortable talking to me about. And my book on the gangs, I did not use their names, so there was anonymity in this book. Where persons did not want me to mention their names, I did not. So there are people I interviewed in my books that I did not put their names. That happened a lot in this last book. There were some people though that did not care, and they told me I could use their names. The stories that I got from actual from documentaries or from newspapers and stuff, I use the person's real name.
Oh wow, that's fantastic. It sounds really, really interesting in terms of how you got the information and put your books together. But what was the main motivation behind writing the books in the first place?
Documenting, leaving a trail of our history for the young ones coming up who do not know, who will not know, who barely. My nephew, who's 9 years, a great nephew, he does not know who's Mark Young, Alfred Harding. He does not know who's Buddy Braffitt. These men have died many years ago. When Mark Young died, I was a teenager. Zane is 9 years old. So when he becomes an adult and is interested in reading these things, we have a history that has been collected. I keep telling people. A history does not always have to be positive. You can have dark history as well, but you have the history. I mean, y'all have the Yorkshire Killer. You have different kinds of killers. They're documented. There's a museum covering all of these things. We don't have that in Barbados, but I believe that we have to capture it. And I've watched my but those who read my books, my fan base has grown from 0 to 9,000 people, and I think that that's a major achievement. It shows, and I try to keep it active. I try to talk about what's going on. I go back to anniversaries of events and remind people that this was a part of our history that was dark, but we've moved on from it. But it that, just never forget. Just like 9/11, we never forget.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's important that a Barbadian is capturing Barbadian history rather than people coming in and putting
Exactly.
their own imprint on things. So I really do commend you for doing the work that you do. And I've sat
Thank
in
you.
on a few of your Zoom calls as well, where you're talking about different aspects of the criminal justice system. Kim, tell me, has much changed since Barbados became a republic in terms of criminal justice?
No, the short answer, no. No, it's still the same
Okay.
laws. We still have the same justice system. Nothing has changed.
Right. I was hoping that
We
there will be
had
some
moved away from
kind
the
of.
Privy Council years ago. We still just go to the Caribbean
That's
Court of
right.
Justice. So, and that was before we became a republic.
Yeah. I was hoping that there, in the interim period, that there had been some kind of review in terms of looking at the speed of justice. You said it yourself, you
Well,
know.
we've hired more judges, but they're trying to make amends. We just recently have a criminal justice board that's looking at some of the issues in the criminal justice system, but those things take time. They have to meet, the recommendations have to be made, they have to go before Parliament. So, in short answer, no. We still do not hang anybody. Our last hanging in Barbados was 1984, and it's considered inhumane, and we have not hanged anybody in Barbados in 30 whatever years. Yeah, nearly 40 years.
So you said you do work alongside the Attorney General's office, and I've seen you travel throughout the region as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that you do in that department?
Well, the job that I'm in literally is a new job. I've only started working in this particular area in June. So I used to work at the Criminal Justice Research and Planning Unit as a senior research officer, doing a lot of research on crime and criminal justice system. But the Prime Minister has created a new post, a new minister, the Minister of State under the Office of the Attorney General. His name is Minister Corey Lane, and he has the responsibility for crime prevention. I have now been tasked to work with him as criminologist attached to him, where I will be looking at the crime, his crime plan, and offering my professional opinion on it with recommendations and ensuring that it is a plan that is that follows the science and how it's rolled out is rolled out in a systematic and structured way. And I will be there to advise him as well.
And Kim, what might that look like? If you could be part of one change, what change would that be?
In the criminal justice system? Well, my heart, and this is a bias, so it's nothing that I personally can do myself, but one of the things that I advocate for is justice for victims. I think that we need to do more work with victims. We have a lot, there are a lot of rights for offenders, but we need to pay more attention to the rights of victims. And I believe that that's one of the areas that needs strengthening. I know in the UK, I actually went to a conference in the UK last year. Modernizing Criminal Justice was the conference. I was invited to it and I attended. And I did not realize that the UK has a victim code. So it is something that I think that Barbados, I actually want to recommend it as something that we should consider, where we outline some rights for victims and ensure that those rights are followed by all, including the justice system, including police, prisons, and other agencies. And including the right to a fairly speedy trial. So those are things that I'm advocating for, and I'm hoping that in my lifetime I get to see, including victim compensation.
That's wonderful, Kim. We're on the same page there. You know, I do think that it's unfortunate for the defendant and also the victim of an offence for to be going on for years and years and years, and people losing their liberty because they're incarcerated, waiting for a trial date to come up. And you know, we in the UK have things like custody time limits. So from the time that person is on remand, the clock starts ticking in terms of how speedy people
Exactly.
work their way up through the criminal justice system to a
The
conclusion.
challenge that we have is that there are few criminal lawyers to the amount of crime we have. It's not a lucrative or sexy field of law. And then we obviously have a lot of challenges within the system itself. I'm hoping, as I said, with the new Criminal Justice Board looking at these challenges, that we will see improvements in years to come. But we have to get rid of the backlog first. And there's a lot, there are thousands of cases,
Yeah, I can
some
see
going on
that.
for over 10 years.
Yes, I think I read about one case in the newspaper. The guy had slipped through the criminal justice system and on remand for 10 years. Not acceptable. But moving away from that now and back to the books, what are your future projects? As I'm sure that there's another book in you, Kim.
I'm thinking of writing a book on dangerous offenders, but I'm not sure yet. That largely relies on the willingness of those who are the dangerous offenders to want to talk to me, because I would not want to write a book without talking to them firsthand. There's one dangerous offender who killed himself in prison, so obviously that does not matter. But it would be nice to have an interview with them to find out their backgrounds and to have a psychological opinion on these persons, because they live among us, and if we can see what are the risk factors, that will go a long way in getting help for persons who need help before they become dangerous offenders and problematic to society.
Any other projects in the offing?
Not where books are concerned. No. No, I personally have done fairly good with five already, and they're all people like them. People like the books, and I appreciate that, because when I first wrote Barbados Most Wanted, I was a bit scared because I did not know how it would have been received. But I've heard if I get 100 comments, 99 of them are positive. So I know that it is something good. You always have the one-off comments about people from people, but for the most part, the comments have been really good and the feedback has been excellent.
That's really nice to hear. And you're right, there will always be one person, but my view is not everything is for everybody. They'll just have to rock and roll with that if they're unhappy with the book. And furthermore, do the research and write your own book then. So many
Exactly.
people have a lot of talk, but the kind of diligent work and research that you have to do to put into your books, it's not like fiction, is it? In my books, I can say the sky is pink if I wanted to. It's fiction and people can suspend their belief. But when you're writing nonfiction and you're writing the way that you write, everything has to be on point in terms of being factually correct, doing your due diligence, making sure that you've heard the story and that you're representing it correctly as well. So I commend you on all of those things. And I'm looking out because I don't like odd numbers. So I'm looking out for a sixth book to go
Well,
with the
as I
five. It'd
said,
be a
that
set.
largely depends on the offenders themselves. I can write about them without talking to them, but it's not going to be the same. So what I may do is look at how, like on crime channels, because they do a lot of research on offenders. Many of them they don't talk to, but they talk to people who know them. So I will see if that is an option that I can also explore.
Well, Kim, is there also a documentary or a film, somewhere in
I've
your
tried
mind
I
that's
that has been on the cards for so long, but the money and investment is the challenge. People want me to do a documentary, people want the film, but we don't know where to turn to get the money because you can't
Well,
write a film.
why not say something to my listeners now and name a couple of things on your wish list because you just never know who's listening.
Okay, well, that's true. So there was discussion about writing about a film. We actually did some shooting. I don't know if you remember because you follow my page. We did some short videos. Birdhouse Productions is what they were called. That was just before the pandemic. We wanted to do a film on Buddy Brafit. He was the dynamite specialist. That Buddy was known for throwing dynamite at police and so on. So he was, I don't want to call him a hero, but he's like he goes on in folklore as one of the baddest that we had in our time. And people wanted to see a movie out of that. But there just was no money to do it. So anybody, corporate Barbados, corporate UK, anybody listening, I think it's a good investment. You just need to have a good storyline, and because he has died, obviously he died since 2003, but he's left a legacy. Him and Winston Hall. Winston Hall, again, one of our escape artists who escaped custody three times to the point that he was called Houdini, our local Houdini. Managed to escape Glengarry twice. He never went back. He was still on the outside, but he escaped custody three times and remained on the run for a collective 16 years. He was on the run for those three escapes. So he and himself will make a very good storyline.
Yes, I mean, there's a song written about him as well, isn't
Yeah,
it? I
there's
Can't Hurt
several.
My Brother by your friend called Red Plastic
Red
Bag.
plastic bag, yes.
Yep. I do remember my great aunt saying, I think he missed that one of the halls in Barbados, Flint Hall in St.
Yes.
Michael. And
Listen.
yeah, my
Yes.
aunt was very upset with him for doing that. He said, so wait, he
Yes.
ain't nobody. So yes,
Yes, she
Winston
forgot that.
Hall on his own would make a fantastic film or
I believe
documentary.
that too. And I am going to keep my fingers crossed and hope that someday soon somebody takes up the idea and runs with it. There have been offers, there have been, but they have not gotten off the
Kim, I could talk to you forever. You know that.
ground.
But I have to bring this interview to a close. If people want to find out more about you and your books, how do they do that?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Barbados True Crime Stories, and you can just join or follow, and you can see all of my updates on my books and so on.
Excellent. And if people wanted to get hold of your book, where would they find that?
You can buy the books directly from me, or you can message me on WhatsApp at 246-848-6136.
That's fantastic. I've got a feeling that your books are going to be very popular amongst my listeners. So thank you so much for this
Thank you
interview. And I
too.
wish you all the very best in life and with the sixth book as well.
Thank you, Pam. And I look forward to reading your second book as well. And thank you too, and all the success with your books from one author to the
Bye.
other.
It is competition time now. Kim is a prolific writer, but how many books has she published? Reached out to me on Instagram at Loving the Author with the correct answer by this Friday for your chance to win a copy of one of her books. Good luck, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.